Control to flight 1201, throttle back bearing 0300.
Roger that, Control. Confirm flight 1201.
Tower to flight 560, upon taxi completion, you are clear for takeoff.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please fasten your seatbelts, then sit back and relax and get ready to fly by night.
Now, your host, Ken Cervera.
AM 560, The Answer. This is Fly By Night. I am your host, Ken Cervera. What a show we have for you guys tonight. A frequent guest on this show. He is a fantastic headlining comedian who has been seen on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, and he's now an author. He has a brand new book out called Monkey in the Middle. My great friend, Dobie Maxwell, is on Fly By Night. How are you, buddy?
Ken, it's always great to be here. I can never follow your introduction. It makes me pop it in the clutch and go into fifth gear. Not even first gear.
Hey, you've never hurt for energy on the show, man. You are always prepared.
Well, it's midnight. You know, people are driving around. You got to cut through the static.
Exactly.
Keep it right here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it's another slash to put on my business card. Comedian slash author slash forklift driver slash Florida swampland. Forklift is first.
Goes first.
Yeah, well, I'm in the union, so I'm up to about 12 bucks an hour now.
Listen, man, this has got to be an exciting time for you. I know that you've been on the show before and you've talked about the fact that you were going to turn this story into a book.
Yes.
It is a great story. It is a compelling story, and people should run out and buy Monkey in the Middle.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It's like when life gives you lemons, you know, make lemonade.
You better believe
I've always been, if life gives you lemons, put them in the freezer till they're really hard, and then throw them at the cars of people you really don't like and smash their windshield. But that's never been a very viable solution. You don't hear Tony Robbins talking about things like this. And what I mean is, you know, life is dumped on us all, Ken. You know that is.
We absolutely
all have our rainy days and whatever one of analogy that you want to use.
Sure.
And I had a story, which was a very disturbing one, and we talked about it in a past show.
Yeah.
And it just happened when I was a little kid. We all have a best friend. You had one growing up. Everybody does.
Sure.
Mine decided that he worked at a bank, and they terminated him from a bank. He decided he was going to show that bank manager, and he robbed the bank. Not once, but twice. And this is over a period of a couple of years.
Oh, my God.
And the second time, he wore a gorilla mask and a tuxedo and helium balloons in a package, and there was a gorilla gram that would come in the bank. He was the head of security, so he got the idea from a real guy that was a gorilla gram that would come in there and give birthday presents.
Oh, my God.
So that's why the title of the book is called Monkey in the Middle.
Sure.
Because I was the monkey. You know, I mean, he dressed like the monkey, but I was in the monkey in the middle. I had to wear a wire for the FBI and get him to confess that he did it, which he did.
Yeah.
And sent him to prison for 6.5 years. But there's so many twists and turns in the book, and everybody says, well, you know, what about this? And I don't want to tell the story again.
Sure, so
I wrote down the book, and I'm going to end up having to tell it a million more times.
Well, let's give, for people who have not heard this story before, let's just give an encapsulated version of it, okay?
Okay.
So now this friend of yours,
my ex-friend, and the one question that everybody asks, let's get over with, are you still friends with him?
Yeah.
No, we're not still friends. The last time I talked to him, I was wearing a wire in a restaurant for the FBI, and that's the last time I talked to him.
And this is, from the time this started,
yes,
till the time it ended, what is the time frame? How long?
6.5 to 7 years.
Oh, my God.
But we were friends since we were 11 years old.
Right.
And that's where the real story starts in the book, and that's why, I don't know if you've ever written a book before, and if everybody
out there
is thinking about writing one, I thought it would be a page count, and the publisher said, no, shoot for a word count of 100,000 words, which sounds like a lot. I mean, I talk fast. I did that about, you know, the last 3 minutes. I've
made
about 30,000 right there. And it came out to be about 135,000. I went way over. And he said, okay, don't worry about it. We'll just cut. We'll have our editor cut. And they read the whole thing and said, we're not going to cut one word out of it. Your story is right there.
Nice.
It's all meat.
Nice.
There's twists. There's turns. There's funny parts. There's parts that aren't funny.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating, especially if it's not you.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And I read it, and I'm thinking, wait, I wrote the thing. How's it going to come out? Wait, I wrote it.
Yeah.
You know, it gets in your mind. It's like a different person.
Okay, so as you approach this project, are you a perfectionist?
No, I'm an improvementist.
Okay.
That's the one thing that has kept me from putting a bullet in my head throughout the years. You know yourself as a performer. You know, not only are you on the radio, you're also a stand-up comic and whatever other things that you do, and you also play some music, I think, too. You're a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you miss, you know, you miss a note, oh, my gosh. It's like the audience usually doesn't know.
Right.
So I've never... some artists are perfectionists. I just want to improve and get better. I know there's going to be flaws and flubs, but I'm okay with that.
Okay, so let's go back to the encapsulated version of the story.
Sure.
Okay, so now, your childhood friends with this guy. He works for a bank. Mm-hmm. He gets terminated from the bank.
Correct.
Now what?
Well, he's ready to, he's angry, and he wants to rob the bank, because he said, you know, they put the $6 an hour rent-a-cops
sure.
in there, and he wanted to get back at the bank president. And he said he wanted a sign from above. That's what he said. I wanted a sign from the Lord as to when I should. I would have hated myself if I did. I would have hated myself if I didn't. And I thought, if I get a sign, I'm going to go do it. And I got fired from a radio job that I was working in Milwaukee, our hometown. And I called him. It was the week before Christmas. I said, boy, I'm depressed. Let's go someplace warm and sunny and cheer up on the week before Christmas. And he said, where do you want to go? And I said, Las Vegas. We've never been there before. So while I was renting a car and going to pick up my cousin, who was going to go with us, he robbed the bank the first time.
Oh, my God.
Not in a gorilla suit.
Okay, this was pre-gorilla suit.
Pre-gorilla suit. He hadn't evolved into that yet. I don't know if he had a Nixon mask. I don't know what he was wearing. You know, a hoodie with his eyes like looked like a, you know, an Ewok from Star Wars. I don't know what he looked like. You know, he had a Marty Ingalls mask on, you know, 60s singer. So he robs the bank. He's got $105,000 of stolen bank money in the rental car that's in my name, because I'm the only one that has a credit card at the time.
Oh, my God.
So we drove from Milwaukee to Las Vegas.
And you don't know this. You don't know
that he did not tell me until almost a year later.
Oh, my God.
And the whole way out there, he dropped hints and there were quirks. I won't get into the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there was quirks and hints mm-hmm. and things that just seemed so odd at the time, which when he told me all laid into place, and it pointed at me, and he said, yeah, you know, the FBI is coming down on me really, really hard, and they wanted to know what I did on my, the day of the bank
robbery.
I said I was with my best friend, Dobie Maxwell, in his rental car as we drove from Milwaukee to Vegas.
Nice guy.
But don't worry, because you're not a suspect. No, I was in it knee deep before I could even get out of it.
Oh, my God.
And days became weeks, became months, and one thing led to another. And I had a near-fatal car accident. I thought I was going to die.
Yep.
And then it's...
Okay, so now, at the time this is going on,
yes.
you are also doing comedy.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
So you have to go on stage at night with all of this baggage.
Yes.
And be funny.
Be funny.
You're also on the radio at some point.
On the radio,
again, okay?
Yes.
And mm-hmm. and you have to go in and do a morning show.
Absolutely.
And perform.
And be funny.
How could you compartmentalize that in your mind to be able to go out and perform?
I mean no disrespect to the people that have spent time in, like, Papillon in prison.
Sure.
And the people that were in the camps. And I'm not saying my life was as serious as, please don't make that mistake. But they said they could compartmentalize it. And you just put that thing in the behind you. I knew that the time on stage, I needed to live. I had no family to go to.
Right.
I had to do that. So I just had to put everything else on hold, play my little, game and be the funny guy and get my money. But all day, this is before cell phones and the internet, I was on the phone for 8 hours a day with my lawyer back in Milwaukee.
And this is happening every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day. And there was about a three-month period where I thought I was going to go to prison.
Well, now, what toll is this taking on both your mental health and your physical health?
Oh, man, and not sleeping and not eating very well. And I got to the point where I was on the road at 3 weeks at a crack. And you know yourself, that's a long time.
It is.
You know, comedians, people don't think about it. You know, sports people, teams, a baseball team goes on the road, what, 3-4 days?
Yep.
Maybe 10 days tops?
Yep.
We're talking 21 days.
Sure.
You're not in your own bed. You're not in your own town. It was very bad. I mean, I'm surprised I survived through it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm wondering, because this had to have been a drag through the mud.
Major
for you.
Drag
I
through
mean,
the mud.
You know, and did you tell anybody what was going on?
I could not.
Okay, and that's what I wondered, because now, because you can't tell somebody mm-hmm. what's going on, you're bottling all of this stuff
yes.
up. You're bottling up the stress. You don't have anybody giving you any advice.
I had a lawyer who was my car accident lawyer. I told you I had a car accident.
Yes, uh-huh.
He said, look, I'm not qualified to defend you against a bank robbery. You know, it's like getting Peter Francis Geraci to get you out of the electric chair. No offense to Peter Francis Geraci. It's the monkey in the middle. And it's very funny. It is funny if you're not that guy.
Yeah.
And it's like I had nobody, no nepotism, couldn't call my
sure.
uncle who was
sure.
the judge.
Sure.
None of that.
Yep.
A white trash Milwaukee orphan.
Well, okay. And I would eliminate the white trash from that right now.
Okay.
Because you're certainly not that. But tell me, okay, so now this is all bottling up inside of you. There must have been time. I mean, if you had a heckler on stage that night.
That's a very good point, Ken. I'm glad you brought that up. There was a night I was in Colorado Springs. I'll never forget it. And some guy had a couple of beers in him, and he let loose. And I warned him. I said, tonight would not be a good night to do that. Exactly. And he said one more thing. And as it was the barrage of the fire-breathing dragon. Next thing I knew, the cops were there, and the show was over.
Wow.
And they said, I've never seen anybody flip like that. Yeah. So,
well, it had to have come out volcanically.
Yeah, it did. After that much pressure.
That being that pent up.
And they said, boy, you seem like such a nice guy. I've never seen you pop like that before. If he only knew.
Well, you are a very wonderful guy.
Thank you, buddy.
My guest on tonight's Fly By Night, we are in the first class cabin, Cabin C, and his name is Dobie Maxwell. He's been on this show many more times. He has a brand new book called Monkey in the Middle. You guys, this is an amazing story. You have to go out and buy this book, and we'll talk to you about where they can get it when we come back from the break. My name is Ken Cervera. This show is Fly By Night. We are going to be right back after these vital capitalistic messages. Stay with us.
No 2-hour security lines when you fly by night. Now, back to the show with your host, Ken Cervera, on AM 560, The Answer.
We are back right now with our guest tonight. His name is Dobie Maxwell. This guy is a phenomenal comedian. You've seen him on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. And now you can add author to the bio. He has a brand new book called Monkey in the Middle. I'm excited about this book because I have known Dobie for a long time. I've known this story. This story has, as Dobie says, a million twists and turns. This is not only a perfect idea for a book. It's a true story, but it's also a great movie script. So all of you producers and directors out there listening, let me explain something to you. This is a golden opportunity to get in touch with Mr. Maxwell and turn this baby into a Hollywood movie.
And you know how it is in Hollywood. They're going to have two Wayans brothers, and Carmen Electra is going to be in it, and a duck. You know, they're going to make it. We're not going to go to Las Vegas. We're going to take you through Canada.
That's right.
You
know? The duck's going to demand his own dressing room.
Absolutely.
And Dom Perignon and the whole thing.
Monkey in the Middle. No, duck in the dirt. That's what we're going to call it. We're not going to rob a bank. We're going to...
Yeah, they'll change it.
Yeah.
A friend of mine wrote a script for Golden Girls.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, Once Upon a Time. The guy who's now doing the Sinatra impression.
Oh, yeah.
Tony DeLay.
Very good. Yeah, great guy.
Yeah, great guy. And he said by the time they were done editing and changing that, there was not one word of his in the script. He still got paid.
Sure, he still got paid. What was it? Ken Kesey wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He said that's the only movie he will not watch.
Really?
He said it was nothing like his book. Oh, okay. Now, I happen to really enjoy that movie, and it was very popular and it won Oscars.
Yeah.
But he, in his mind, his vision, he said, that's not at all what it is. And there's no way. I lived it. You can't get inside my head.
Sure.
So I'll hate no matter who does it. I don't care if Spielberg does it and Harrison Ford plays me.
Right.
But it's an opportunity where we were both in our 20s, the best friends.
Yep.
And in wrestling, you know, it's the good guy becomes the bad guy. That's called a heel turn.
Right.
And that's going to be the great role to play. Mm-hmm. It's two best friends. It's going to be a buddy movie across country. And the thing is, I mean, if you read comedians' biographies, they're very sad. I don't know if you ever read Charlie Chaplin's autobiography.
I have.
It's very sad.
Yeah,
alcoholic
is.
Parents and horrible and Jackie Gleason. And most comedians come from a horrible background. And I did. It's just the way it is. My grandparents raised me. My dad was a biker. My mother was a drug addict and just abandoned our family. And I didn't ever live with my siblings. It was very, very painful. So to have this guy as a best friend from age 11, he came from a bad place too. He lived in the projects. I lived 2 blocks from the projects.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just playing baseball. And I was just literally walking by in a funk past the game of baseball was going on. And he hit a foul ball, which whizzed about 2 inches from my head. And he said, hey, kid, you want to play baseball? Okay. And that's how we got to be friends.
Oh, my God.
So all the coming of age things that we did.
Sure,
and all the things that we did as teenagers, we were closer than our own brother.
Yeah.
On Christmas, we had no place to go with our families. We'd go to a Chinese restaurant in Milwaukee. There were Jewish people eating, Chinese people cooking, and two schmoes, us. You know, and these things add up over time.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
they do.
And to have to sit in court and turn against him was the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
But it sounds like he turned against you first.
He turned against me first.
Yeah.
He did. And as it goes, and I tried to be as accurate as I could. I'm not saying that I was the good guy and he was the bad guy, but he just kind of turned. And then next thing you know, you got this monster in front of you. And the night before the trial, the government said, not only is he saying that he didn't do that robbery, he's saying by name that you did.
Oh my God.
So if you're lying to us, I want you to know that your immunity is going to be revoked.
Oh
not
my
only
God.
Are you going to do his time, you're going to do your time too. You'll do double time.
Sure, sure. Now, if you met this individual today, okay, if you walk through the door right now,
yes.
By the way, I'm not going to surprise you.
I know somebody is. I'm expecting it.
Well, okay, so say he walked through the door and he sat in the seat.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to him?
Are you happy now? And I was just, he wouldn't look me in the eye when he told me he robbed the bank. He would not look me in the eye in the courthouse, you know, during the trial. You know, a federal court. And our friend that was supposed to go on the trip to Vegas with us was supposed to be a four-man trip. And he wrote for the Milwaukee newspaper, and he was just kind of getting started. He was in his 20s, and there was a big hockey tournament that he had to cover. He says, guys, I can't go with you. But he was there for the trial. And he said, you don't picture your best friends on stage at a federal court.
Right.
You turn on the news, someone else's house burned down.
Yes.
Someone else fell off a cliff and died.
That's right.
He goes, it's not anybody you know. And he says, you're in there, and these guys I've known my whole life, and they're talking back and forth to each other. And he said, the government witnesses, the FBI, because it got all out. It wasn't just a regular bank robbery. That story was a number one lead story on the TV and radio in Milwaukee. And he said, all the agents were watching you, and you were there, and you were nailing it because you have stage experience.
Sure.
And I was telling the truth.
Yep.
It was painful.
Yeah.
But I know I didn't do it.
Yeah.
He knows in his heart that he did.
You have had no contact with him since this happened, correct?
I have not, no.
Okay. Have you heard what he's doing now?
No, that's the thing. I tried Googling him to see what was going to happen, and his ex-wife found me on Facebook. Well, Facebook is a way to, your past comes back to haunt you, good and bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's good or bad. And I said, is this the same, you know, so-and-so's wife? Yes, it is. He said, he ruined our life. We're not together anymore. It was a horrible thing. Obviously, I said, you know, I'd really like to get together. I wrote a book about it. And she said, I would like to read the book to see your stance because I felt so bad for you having to testify.
Sure.
And he was there. She was not there. His mother was not there. He's got two brothers. They weren't there. He was by himself.
Yeah, because this is what we didn't talk about on the previous show.
Sure.
And so, okay, so you knew this guy from the time you were a kid. What could have possibly been his motivation to do something
I've tried
insane.
To think about this for years. I mean, the whole middle child, supposedly your birth order, do you need attention? He was always an adrenaline junkie. You know, fast bicycles, you know, jumping Evel Knievel became fast motorcycles when he got to be an adult.
Sure.
He liked to skydive. He liked to do anything that had adrenaline in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I watched you our whole life. He goes, you played baseball. I had a tryout with the Kansas City Royals,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't make it. He said, you had passion for baseball,
mm-hmm.
and you had a disappointment. And then you got into comedy, and they treated you poorly, but you kept going. Then you got into radio,
mm-hmm.
and they fired you. But you said, you never gave up, he mm-hmm. said to me. And he said, I don't have any passion like that. I didn't think I had any until I robbed that bank. It was such a thrill. He goes, it was the most exhilarating. I was alive. I was awake. I loved every second of it. He goes, I'm sorry, but it captured my attention. And he said, I loved thinking about it. I loved planning it. I loved doing it. And all I wanted to do when I got done with the first one was do it again.
Wow.
And so he did the second one. I don't know that it's only two banks that he did rob. And we went to prison for 6.5 years. I don't know that he didn't learn how to be a better robber.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't say that. And he always talked about doing other ones. And he was very cocky. It got to the point where I knew that he robbed the bank. And I said, look, I'm going to have my own life here. Just let's keep it quiet. Because I thought they were going to come for me any day. The days became weeks, became months. And the time just went on. And he would order, here's an example. He would order magazines subscriptions. And his first name was Tim. Tim, in his last name, he would put capital D-E, capital R-O-B-B-E-R.
Tim, oh my God,
Tim the robber.
Oh my God.
You know, and they send you 4 or 5 issues of the magazine and they say you're not paying. And he would just, anything like that, he thought that was funny. And in a weird, warped, twisted way, I guess it would be funny to talk about, but you don't do it.
Well, and I often wonder about people like that. Do they, way down deep, have a death wish?
You know, there's got to be something to that. I talked to the FBI about it. I said, am I going to have to worry when he gets out of prison that he's going to shoot me?
Uh-huh.
And he said, no, he was a punk. He was not a criminal, a hardened criminal. A punk, he said, he talked a mean game, never thought he would get caught. He's going to find prison to be such a horrific place
mm-hmm.
that you're the last person on earth he will ever talk to again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got out in 2004, so it's been over, you know, it's been 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Have not heard one email, one call, nothing. I don't know if he's living or dead. I'm assuming he's living. His mother passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I did see that. But when I Google him online, all that comes up is the bank robbery documents from the court.
This was Mrs. DeRobert.
Not his mom. Yeah, exactly. I felt bad for his wife, too.
Of course. I mean, this guy's destroying his life.
Yeah.
And you wonder, okay, it's an adrenaline rush. But if you and I have a bad show at night, we have an adrenaline rush. Mm-hmm. The worst we can have is a heckler. This guy could be shot to death.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to say there's something much deeper going on here than what you and I experience on a daily.
You know, they always talk about the serial killers. They take their brain and put it in a pickle jar, and they see, I don't know if they, you know, put a turkey baster in there where they find out what's wrong with those people. But we're not all wired the same.
Yeah.
We're just not.
Well, and I guess that's what this rammed through for you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So what life lessons did you pull out of this, if there are any?
Well, it's really hard. And I told him when this whole thing was going on, I said, you know, please, just, you said you're going to take it like a man. He goes, yeah, I'm not going to do that now. He's like, can't shut up. If you shut up and I shut up, they'll never catch
us. Oh, my God.
I said, you would have turned me in a lot sooner than I turned you in if the situation was reversed.
Right.
So that's what I learned. Don't trust anybody. Well, I'm sorry to learn that lesson.
Well, and that had to carry forward with you for years.
Oh, yeah.
Of being very hesitant to put your trust.
He was the one, though. I didn't trust anybody. If my mother leaves you, who are you going to trust after that?
Trust?
Now,
right.
He was the one that built up after all those years, and then have him pull it out from under you, too.
Absolutely.
It was very painful.
Absolutely.
I still have nightmares about it to this day. I'm not going to lie to you.
Absolutely. My guest tonight, just a sensational individual. Love this guy like a brother. His name is Dobie Maxwell. Great comedian. And now you can add to the list of his many, many credits, author. He has a new book called Monkey in the Middle. I would strongly advise you to go out and get it. And once again, I teased it the first time. We will talk about where you can get it right after these messages. Don't go anywhere.
Fasten your seatbelts. You're back on the air with Fly By Night on AM 560. The Answer.
That is our wonderful producer, Debbie Schreiner, being all over it.
You know, Debbie's always been great. Now, that's truly funny.
It is very funny.
I have a sense of humor, and I can,
well, she performs comedy as well.
Well, she does a very good job, because that was a wonderful twist.
She's right in there with us.
Yeah.
My guest this evening on Fly By Night is a tremendous friend of mine. He also has a brand new book out called Monkey in the Middle. And where can people get this book?
Eckhart's Press, Eckhart's Press. As a gentleman named Rick Kempfer, and his publishing, a co-publisher, is a gentleman named Dave Stern.
Right.
And they've had, Rick was my producer when I worked at another radio station on the morning show, and we sat down breakfast, and that story came up, and I told him, he says, oh, this is a movie.
Absolutely.
So we teamed up. He's a great writer.
Yeah.
And we have a screenplay first.
Sure.
And like any bands or singers, he didn't like his book publisher. So he said, I started my own publishing company. He said, why don't we release it as a book? And I thought, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
So it's Eckhart's Press. You can get it there. They'll mail it out. We'll be doing a book signing in Milwaukee, if anybody's up in the Milwaukee area, at Shank Hall on Monday, March 21st.
Okay.
And that'll be at 7 p.m.
Oh, that's coming right up.
That's coming right up. And that's my very first place I ever did comedy. It's my hometown.
Oh, my God.
The first place I got. And the guy, it's a rock club now.
Sure.
It used to be a rock club then.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, if you want to do it here, you can do that. So it's a little bit of a drive. So if you want to, there'll be people there. I hope the bank robber doesn't show up, you know, start dusting bullets. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. That's my luck, you know. Oh, the big man author, bang.
Well, where was this guy put up? What prison?
That's a really good question. He was in Sandstone, Minnesota, which is the same place that Tim Allen, Tool Time.
Yes.
And people don't realize he did prison time for drug trafficking.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that was in Sandstone, Minnesota. Also, Jim Baker, the evangelist. So it's the...
oh, really?
Yeah. So hopefully, if the book does well, that'll be the third one. And the monkey bank robber guy was there, too. No, the man that made the prison famous.
Oh, my God.
And it's funny because it's in northern Minnesota, north of the Twin Cities, and I had a gig in Duluth when he was in prison. And about 5 seconds as I'm driving past Sandstone exit, I thought, should I go in there and no, what do I have to say to him?
Right.
He was in prison at the time.
Right.
What's up? Are you happy? No, I didn't.
Well, thank God it was him and not you.
Well, my lawyer said innocent people go to jail all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't care. They want a fanny in prison.
Yep.
They don't care whose it is.
Yep.
They're not going to dust it for prints.
Sure.
They want to disclose the case. There are plenty of other ones to work on. They want someone to go to prison. You hear stories all the time about people that get let off that were on death row.
Right. All right. So now you're going to turn this story into a book.
Yes.
And when you're writing a book, as my friend the late, great John Powers said.
Who I know as well, a very, very talented man.
Wonderfully talented, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
He said, you know, the hardest thing for him when he wrote a book was being alone and having to relive feelings again.
Oh, so right.
Okay, so take me through what you're feeling as you're writing this book. The emotions are once again coming to the surface. Did you feel anger again?
Yeah, oh, everything.
Contempt?
Yes. And the, one of the few things smart that I did in my life, not many, but one thing I did, I worked at the radio, or many radio stations, and I've been fired. And I usually did the morning show. And you have to get used to getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then when you get fired, it takes about 2 days to get used to sleeping late again.
Sure.
So it's 8 months of torture to get in that groove. So I got fired, and I was already in the groove. So I thought, you know what, it was about a year or two after the bank thing happened. I said, I'm just going to write, I don't consider myself a writer, what the story was about. Everything I can remember, every little detail, everything that happened. And I got up at 4 a.m. and I just would write all day long until I slept. Eat, sleep, write. That's it. Mm-hmm. It took about 16 or 17 days of that. And I had about 160-page
wow.
just a dossier
sure.
of what was there. And I gave that to the publisher as we went back and forth. He goes, yeah. That's the best thing you did. Because as life goes on, memories
You're
fade.
You're going to forget. Yep.
Memories fade. A little
yep.
details go away.
Yep.
So that was the first thing I did. And that sat for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided, well, I'm going to try to write it into a book and some chapters. And then I did that. And that was about 5 years later. And that was okay. But I wasn't done. And then 1 year, my birthday is March 14th. And why I got up and I said, you know what? I'm going to see if I can do 30 straight days of writing one page a day
sure.
of what it's like to be a comedian. I don't know why I thought that, but I thought, man, it'd be kind of cool because I was a big fan of the book Ball 4 by Jim Boughton.
Great book.
Great book. Now I know Jim Boughton.
Sure.
The Gorillazist.
Sure.
And it said it was just a diary of what it's like to be a comedian. So I tried that, and 30 days became 9.5 years. And I wrote a blog for 9.5 years. I'm not saying I was Hemingway, but I never had writer's block. It was never shorter than a page, never longer than 2 pages. And just about things that in my life and comedy and all these kind of things. It was called the Dented Can Diary.
Right.
Because I say comedians are dented cans.
Yeah.
So I got to become a much better writer over 9.5 years. And then when I said, I'm going to stop doing my blog and finish this book and crank it out.
Okay, so after all of this experience, after drudging up these feelings
yes.
again, and you're writing this book and you're alone,
yeah.
and okay, what was the most difficult part for you? In other words, what was the most difficult, let's say, chapter to write?
Well, I don't know about necessarily the chapter, mm-hmm. but it's just finding the discipline to get in a groove to get it out.
Right.
It's 23 chapters, I think. It's like 23 short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Write a page, it's difficult for most people.
Sure.
Write a short story. Now write 23 short stories
sure.
and make them interact.
Yeah, and that which is harder, writing and performing stand-up comedy or writing a book?
The book was the hardest thing I've ever done
okay.
in my lifetime full of hard things. This was it. If it stinks, I'm sorry. You do one and top it.
Exactly.
That's
right.
All I'm saying. It was the hardest thing ever.
That's right. My name is Ken Cervera. The show is Fly By Night. We have our sensational friend W. Maxwell on the show today. He has a new book called Monkey in the Middle. And we're going to be right back and talk more about this great book and his experience writing it after these messages. Stay with us.
Get lots of frequent flyer points when you fly by night on AM 560, The Answer.
My guest on Fly By Night tonight is a great friend of mine. You've seen him on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. You've seen him on many shows, and he is a headlining comedian, a very, very good one. He now can add the credit of author to his bio. He has a brand new book called Monkey in the Middle, which was his experience with a friend who robbed two banks.
Same bank twice. Yeah.
Same bank twice. Unbelievable.
It makes me, I think it was a different lifetime. I look back at it and I lived it, it seems. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I hope this guy isn't doing kids' parties.
I don't know. You know, and that's the thing I try to get into in the book. He had a charisma about him.
Yeah.
He hung out with comedians.
Yeah.
You probably met him over the years. That's just Obie's friend. Yeah, he hangs out.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing that he just turned the way he did, and it got darker and darker mm-hmm. over a period of years.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, I was involved in it, and my only choice of staying out of prison was wearing a wire and turning him in.
Good Lord.
And that's the story. People say, oh, the bank robberies, that's amazing. Who knows
right.
a bank robber? My publisher said the two characters that sell books are serial killers and bank robbers. I said, well, I don't know any serial killers. I'm surprised I haven't become one myself. I don't plan on it. But the bank robbers is so fascinating. You know, Willie Sutton, the bank robber. Yes. Everybody said, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is.
Sure.
And
sure.
And what did he, we talked about the whole thing with my friend. He said, you know, Christmas one year, he goes, I would like a Willie Sutton book, a biography. He was fast. I was his hero.
Really?
Willie Sutton, yeah.
Oh, that should have been a telltale sign right there.
Telltale sign. And it's like my grandpa's a big part of this because he raised me. My father was a biker, and it's the bad seed. And my grandpa said when I was a kid, he said, I could tell your dad was a bad seed in the crib. There was something wrong with that
really?
Kid. He was off. There was just something, some kind of vibe weird. He goes, you were on the peak of a house. So I spent extra time with you because I knew that you had a chance to be good.
Yeah.
Because he just was off. And I wanted to be a good father, and he wasn't it. And we were kids when we were 11 years old, and my grandpa came up to me and said, that kid's going to get you into trouble. He's got the same vibe your father had.
See, my father had that same intuition, that same intuitive sense
Absolutely.
About people. That, you know, it comes from, I think, being street smart. You know, there's two kinds of smart.
Book smart
and street smart,
I'm
right?
I'm neither.
Yeah. No. Listen, you wouldn't have written this book if you weren't incredibly
I have a typewriter. A computer with a keyboard. That's what I have.
Okay, so as you're writing this, I imagine comedy was like an oasis because you could get out and perform and then return to this story, correct?
Yeah, what did Hemingway say? You know, to be a good writer, just sit down and open a vein.
Yeah.
And you do it. And, and even my publisher said, he said, a lot of people just don't have the, you talk about anything and I don't have any parameters. I just type what happened, how I remember it. And it's very therapeutic in many ways. And to try to get the words right, you try to turn a phrase and make it flow.
Yeah.
It's like a puzzle. And I think anybody, hopefully if you're listening, you don't have a story as dramatic as this, but I think everybody should try to write even a short story just to have a respect of how difficult it is.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes I took a writing class.
Sure.
And the beauty of it was you find that there's a lot of stuff in you as you're writing that you either forgot about or it was part of your life experience. And if you can get it to flow.
It gets to flow, yes.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and okay, so how, as you're writing this, you're a comedian, you're used to being on stage in front of an audience and timing off of them. But when you're writing a book and you're by yourself, you have to have an inherent sense of timing about what the pacing of those words are and what the pacing of that story is.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Excellent observation. And I think that I wanted to make myself entertained. I know the story. Gee, that word doesn't go there.
Yes.
You know, excruciating. I don't know. And you play around with it. So a thesaurus was a big part of the deal.
Right.
I wanted the rhythm to flow really well. I put some funny lines in there. The one thing my editor, I want to give credit to him. His name is Dr. Lynn Miner, and he was an assistant dean at Marquette University for many years. He took my first comedy class 20 years ago, and he's a comedy magician.
Oh, very cool.
I helped him write some jokes for his act. And he came to me when this whole thing was going on and goes, look, I can help you. He's got about 30 books on college grant seeking. He has raised over $1 billion around the world. They'll have him come into Zimbabwe and Argentina and talk about grant seeking. He goes, I've published 30 books. I can tell you what to do, but don't give me a chapter every 9 months and say, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it.
Sure.
So throughout 2014, about 10 months, we were just really constantly. He walked the fine line between being a pest and a nudge to an encourager. It's like, hey, come on, let's keep it going.
That's beautiful.
And I owe it to him. Jim Boughton talked about his book, Ball 4. Leonard Schechter was the name of his editor. He said, if it wasn't for my editor, it's like a race driver. You have to have a good pit crew or you won't win any race. The best driver will never win a race without that pit crew.
And that's great because it's a whole different discipline from going on stage and writing comedy.
Yeah.
And it's more of an isolation type thing, as we were saying.
And I would ship him a chapter and he would say, you know, tell me a little bit more about your childhood in high school. You know, you just kind of have a couple of sentences as a reader. I need to know a couple more sentences about that. Or this story was kind of long. I really don't need it. Let's only make that a couple of sentences and cut it down from 2 pages.
Right.
And I didn't fight him on anything. And he said the same thing. He goes, I thought you were going to fight me. You didn't fight me one time. I said, no, I'm too close to the story. I want it to be a good book. I want to get it out. He said, kudos to you for listening.
And that's good because you know from comedy, sometimes you get so close to your material and somebody will come out of the audience and give you something that was so obvious to begin with.
You didn't see it.
You never saw it coming.
Yeah.
You were too close to the material.
Sure.
But and I've always had people walk out of the audience and go, hey, you know that line you do, add this. And I go, it was there all along.
Sure.
Why didn't I see it?
Because you saw all the other ones that were harder to find.
Exactly.
You were looking
for
the more difficult stuff.
Exactly right.
Totally true.
Yeah, you know, this is such a compelling story. You guys
Thanks, man.
Oh, I mean, honest to God, You guys have got to go out, get Monkey in the Middle. It's a brand new book. I am so excited about this book. I can't wait to get a copy of this.
Well, I did blame you for the second robbery. I tried to get myself clean. Kenwood did it. Yeah.
When that's in there, and then I'm sitting in prison, I'll have plenty of time to write a book.
That's right.
My name is Ken Cervera. The show is Fly By Night. Our guest is comedian and author W. Maxwell. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. Don't go anywhere. I'll find you.
Flight 560 clearance request granted. You are now free to begin your descent into Chicago.
Ladies and gentlemen, please make sure your seatbacks and tray tables are in the upright locked position in preparation for our landing.
You're always first class when you fly by night. Now, back to the show on AM 560. The Answer.
My name is Ken Cervera. The show is Fly By Night. We have as our guest this evening a great comedian. In fact, let's talk about some of your... His name is Dobie Maxwell. Let's talk about the dates you have coming up in town.
I will be performing at Zany's in St. Charles in the Pheasant Run Resort, April 24, 5, and 6. There will be copies of the book out there.
Nice.
I'll be selling jams and jellies. I will be selling quilts. Whatever it takes, spices, cinnamon, oregano,
quilting,
whatever it takes, Ken, we have to be entrepreneurial in this.
Dobie will have a quilt with a monkey on it in honor of the book.
I will. Deb, that's exactly right. And some banana pudding to go with it.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Because monkeys like bananas.
Hey, it's another Woodstock, everybody. This is perfect.
Laugh-a-palooza. No, I will be out there. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And a book signing up in Milwaukee on Monday, March 21st. It's at 7 o'clock at Shank Hall.
Now, we want to know where we can get this book, and I want the website for the book, and I want your website, because that's on your website.
The link is Eckhart's Press, Eckhartz Press.com. Also, my DobieMaxwell.com. It's the first link. We'll go right there.
Okay.
It eventually will be on Amazon, but right now, it's got to crawl before you walk, before you run, and the publisher said, let's get your fans to get it first, and it's easier that way.
Do you have another book in you?
I have. You know what? That's funny that you asked that. It's not going to be as dramatic as this particular story, but I have three more. I just thought, because now, as I told you, as I was writing this blog for 9.5 years,
sure.
And it says, okay, Ken, write 2,500 pages about your life. Go.
Yeah.
What an overwhelming, daunting task
that
is.
Absolutely.
This is total tortoise in the hair. I have that. I've got about 2,700 pages.
Wow.
I'm not saying they're all great, but I catalog them into comedy-type stuff. Now, also, I've gotten back with my siblings. We were estranged for decades.
Yeah, and this is a really happy story.
Very happy.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about getting back together and that, and I had some other person. So there's three different categories of things over 2,700 pages. I'm not saying they're going to be all stellar, but there's books in all of those. So
That's fantastic. So when you can follow, it's like a Tonight Show shot. It doesn't do you good to do one Tonight Show.
Uh-huh.
You've got to do three more that year. And so
correct.
You're constantly writing, and the fact that you've already done this is so phenomenal.
It's a matter of editing now.
Right.
So that's a good problem to have.
I mean, I can't wait to read this book, but I'm already looking forward to the sequel.
I appreciate it. I have to come up with a clever title. I don't know what that's going to be yet.
Well, we'll work on it.
Half Nuts. Not all the way, but halfway.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I admire you for being able to, like I said, lock yourself in a room and go with all these thoughts and keep going with it. Because was there ever a time when you go, this is getting too much? I'm going to get
And that's when my
this.
Editor came in.
Uh-huh.
He said, take a couple days off. He said, go to a ball game. See a movie, hang out, and then 2 days sometimes became 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I got a gig, I can't do it, and he was very patient, and then he said, okay, come on now.
Yep.
Let's get that next chapter going.
Let's get
going.
Back in there.
And he was really, he knew me well enough over 20 years to say, he said, I knew when I had to push you, and I knew when you needed to be left alone. So that was a very lucky thing. But if you're listening, please do yourself a favor, write a short story. Everybody's got something that maybe you met a celebrity. Maybe when you were a kid, you went to camp and something funny happened.
Sure.
And I really encourage writing. I think everybody has a book in them.
I really believe that you're right. And we were writing in this writing camp short stories, you know, stories about our life. And I wrote one about my dad to where if I read it to this day, it affects me emotionally.
Sure.
You know, but listen, buddy, I wish you nothing but all kinds of success.
Thank you, buddy.
I hope this is so successful that you'll be lighting your cigar with $20 bills.
The nice thing about it, my publisher said, he goes, you know, he's going to be the star because he's the criminal, and that's always the one. You know, Elliot Ness isn't the hero. Al Capone is.
Well, I'd like to thank tonight's guest, Dobie Maxwell. Get his book. Let's give the website one more time.
DobieMaxwell.com. It's the first link. It goes right to Eckhart's Press.
Beautiful. Get the book, Monkey in the Middle. I am telling you guys, I know this story. It's unbelievable. I'd like to thank Dobie Maxwell. I'd always thank my wonderful producer, Debbie Schreiner. Listen to my business show, Part of the Answer, every Sunday night at 7. See you next week. Good night, everybody.